Hi, David Miller here. This is For the Record program number 1374, 40 Wall Street, part 2. This is being recorded on February 15th of the year 2025. The title refers to the crown jewel of Donald Trump's New York commercial real estate portfolio, the building at 40 Wall Street. It is a very interesting building indeed because Trump only owns the building itself. He does not own the land beneath it, which gives the people who do own it primacy in that particular relationship. And those are very interesting people indeed. This two-part series, I hope it's only two, is by way of illustrating who is in power right now. And again, the 64-gigabyte flash drive without going 32 is in the making. Please get it. It will have all of my life's work printed and recorded, a mini library of old anti-fascist books, and I get no money whatsoever from this. It's a very affordable thing, and unfortunately, everything I've been warning about for almost half a century is taking place. Now, we've been reading from an article, and I'm going to not only read some of the excerpting that Terrafractal has put in, but some of his commentary as well. Terrafractal is our brilliant contributing editor, and his work on the 40 Wall Street imbroglio turned us on to it by a loyal listener and Patreon subscriber. I've been reading from the article from the Curbed blog, that's C-U-R-B-E-D, by Andrew Rice, a features writer at New York Magazine, called The Weird Worth of 40 Wall Street, subtitled Donald Trump's Most Troubled Real Estate Could Soon Become a Slick Machine to Curry Favor with the President. Isn't that interesting? And it was, the article is from October 31st, Halloween of last year. Now, continuing with what we've talked about and overlapping with the material that we had in our first program. The value of 40 Wall Street was especially depressed by its unusual ownership structure. The bankers who constructed it had not purchased the ground on which it sat, instead opting to sign a long-term lease with the underlying landowners. The lease currently runs until 2059, with two renewal options that go on through the 22nd century. The owner of a ground lease acts in every way like a building's owner, keeping up with maintenance, paying property taxes, collecting rent, but does not hold the deed to the underlying land. And if the leaseholder stops paying its ground rent or otherwise violates the lease terms, the landowner can foreclose. The leaseholder that sold to Trump, a company from Hong Kong, parenthetically, when it was still a British colony, had found 40 Wall impossible to manage. Quote, all they wanted to do is get the building sold and go back to China, unquote, because a former Trump Organization employee who worked on the deal. And so the seller was willing to accept the number Trump offered, barely more than zero. Then Trump did his thing. He slapped his name on the building. He met the ground owners, a group of silent German investors who had purchased the land in 1982. According to the Real Deal, 80% of the land is owned by a company representing the Hindenburg family, H-I-M-M-E-B-E-R-G, who run a Hamburg ship brokerage company, while the other 20% belongs to a group that includes Stephanie von Bismarck, a descendant of Otto von Bismarck, the Iron Chancellor. Trump hosted members of the family for dinner at his triplex in Trump Tower and, quote, just charmed them to death, unquote, the former employee said. Trump reasoned that most ground owners are just looking for a reliable return without hassle and expense. He promised stability in exchange for concessions that made it easier for him to rent the building and to take out loans to renovate it. He also negotiated a provision that said he could convert 40 Wall into condominiums if he chose. Trump went to Deutsche Bank and pitched it on lending him $125 million for improvements. The executive who struck the deal memorialized it by commissioning a scale model of 40 Wall to display in his office, and Trump became a long-time Deutsche Bank client. By the way, the remarkable relationship between Donald Trump and Deutsche Bank, a key financial institution of the Third Reich and also of the Bormann Group. That is discussed at some length in For the Record program 1109. I'll put a link in the written description to this program, continuing with the Curbed article. Trump promoted the building and filled it with tenants, many of whom were drawn by the cachet of their Wall Street address and the landlord's image as a winner. Trump used it as the headquarters for some of his enterprises like Trump Mortgage, his subprime home lender, and Trump University, which would later several claims it had defrauded students. And by the way, the funky Florida Attorney General who massaged Trump on that was Pam Bondi. She is now Attorney General of the United States. Continuing. News investigation found that 40 Wall's past tenants have included a remarkable number of swindlers and felons. Since then, the executives running an engineering firm that is one of the largest tenants pleaded guilty to bribery charges related to government construction contracts. But 40 Wall also attracted plenty of small businesses and startups that were drawn to Lower Manhattan by its comparatively low rents. By 2015, the building was around 95% full. This Trump effect is hard to quantify. After January 6th, news organizations reported that a handful of tenants, including the Girl Scouts of Greater New York, were trying to vacate the building. 4 years later, the Girl Scouts remain. Its lease runs until 2035, according to the data firm CoStar, so it stuck. But office leases typically last around 10 years, which means many of the ones Trump signed before he was elected have been running out. Whether for economic or political reasons, many tenants are moving elsewhere. Dwayne Reed vacated the corporate headquarters it had on the 21st and 22nd floors when it abandoned its store. The engineering firm Thornton Tomasetti moved in 2020, citing a desire to consolidate its offices in another building after a merger, and is still trying to find someone to sublet its 60,000 square feet. Its broker declined to discuss the space. As tenants depart, comp stacks figures show the Trump Organization has signed a few leases, has signed one more time. As tenants depart, comp stacks figures show the Trump Organization, one more time, take three. As tenants depart, Comstock's figures show that the Trump Organization has signed few leases to replace them. Skipping down. Trump has always been able to convince lenders to take risks on him. Back when 40 Wall was full, he managed to take out mortgages on the property, even though banks generally hate to extend loans to ground lease buildings. They are considered to be shaky collateral because the property is not entirely owned by the debtor. When Trump last refinanced the mortgage on 40 Wall in 2015, he handled it like a family matter. Alan Weisselberg, capital WISELBERG, his longtime chief financial officer and right-hand man, called up his son, Jack, who worked at finance firm Ladder Capital. The Weisselbergs negotiated a 10-year loan of $160 million at an interest rate of 3.7%. The Manhattan office market was stable. Trump had successfully operated the building for decades, and the lender assessed that there would be little chance of a default. The loan would later be bundled with other commercial mortgages into a publicly traded bond, shifting its risk to investors. Quote, "Donald is on board and ready to go," unquote, Jack Weisselberg emailed his colleagues in April of 2015. That June, Trump rode down his escalator and announced he was running for president. A decade later, as the 40-wall mortgage matures, everything is different. The Trump Organization, as a company, has been criminally convicted of tax fraud. Trump and his company faced the huge civil fraud penalty handed down earlier this year by Judge Arthur Engoron, capital E-N-G-O-R-O-N, and Tish James has signaled if he refuses to pay, she can move to seize his real estate assets, including 40 Wall Street. Engoron's decision also banned Trump from involvement in running his family business. All the penalties are on hold while Trump's appeal makes its way through the courts. Alan Weisselberg has served two separate terms in jail, one for tax evasion and the second for committing perjury at the civil fraud trial. In August, the rating agency Fitch downgraded its outlook on the mortgage bond that includes Trump's loan, citing its concerns about Fortiwall solvency as a major factor. Last year, Bloomberg reported that the building's loan had been transferred to a special servicer, a sign of distress, although the decision was later rescinded. Between 2019 and last year, Fortiwall's annual net operating income, the figure the real estate industry uses to determine a building's market value, fell by about a third to $12 million, according to disclosures made to bondholders. Through the first 6 months of 2024, the building was on pace to generate less than $8 million in net income this year, not even enough to pay all the $9.8 million Trump owes in debt service. Like many office landlords who borrowed before the pandemic, Trump now has a building that is worth less than its mortgage balance on paper. Quote, Fortiwall is not alone, unquote, says Kent Swig, SWIG, a real estate executive who has redeveloped many buildings in Lower Manhattan. Two-thirds of the $2 trillion in debt that is coming due over the next 2 years is underwater, unquote. Any new mortgage would be much more expensive because interest rates have more than doubled since 2015. A lender would also demand to see a plan to return Fortiwall to health. It is considered to be, quote, Class B, unquote, real estate in an office market that is punishing anything that is not at the top. Quote, the common areas of the building are old and have not been upgraded, unquote, says a commercial broker. Again, quoting, that would involve a pretty significant, possibly nine-figure investment. Because the building has diminished in value, Trump would also have to be willing to pay down his existing mortgage with cash and to take out a smaller loan, quote, which is not what Trump does, unquote, says a Manhattan building owner. He's a debt person, unquote. And that is presuming he could find a bank willing to refinance the loan at all, which is far from certain because he also has another problem. His ground lease, which contains a contractual time bomb. Currently, Trump pays the ground owners, and we'll have a real deal article about that later on. Currently, Trump pays the ground owners just $2.5 million a year. But Fortiwall's lease contains a clause that says the rent will be periodically reset to reflect the land's fair market value as defined by a formula that is very favorable to the ground owners given the extraordinary increase in Manhattan land prices over the past few decades. The first reset was supposed to happen years ago, but during the 2008 financial crisis, Trump was able to push off the day of reckoning. In his civil fraud case deposition, Trump testified that he had renegotiated, quote, very favorable terms, unquote, and said he foresaw that he would one day convert Fortiwall into a luxury residential building. Quote, if the city ever comes back, unquote, he said, again quoting, you can convert the entire tower of Fortiwall into condos and make an absolute fortune, far more than the $500 or $600 million probably that the building is worth now, unquote. Maybe he'd forgotten that during the last lease negotiation, he gave up his option to unilaterally do a condo conversion. The long postponed reset is now scheduled to happen in 8 years within the term of his next mortgage. For the purposes of revaluation, the reset formula pretends there is no landmark office building on the property and sets its value as if it were empty for development. An appraisal prepared for the last time Trump refinanced estimated that in those circumstances, the Fortiwall land would be worth around $160 million, yielding a reset annual rent of around $10 million, more than the building's current net operating income. The land might be even more valuable today. Woody Heller, H-E-L-L-E-R, a real estate executive who handled a previous sale of Fortiwall back in the 1990s, said that in some circumstances, a rent reset can, quote, destroy the economics, unquote, of a building, and for that reason, again quoting, a leasehold with a fair market value reset is very hard to refinance, unquote. Quote, it's like your head is on a chopping block, unquote, a veteran investment sales broker in Manhattan, said of the situation facing any landlord with an impending rent reset. Quote, the guillotine is being held up by a piece of twine that is fraying. That thing is about to fall, and when it falls, you're dead, unquote. That may sound overdramatic. Matthew Quatnetz, K-W-A-T-I-N-E-T-Z, a professor of real estate economics at New York University, says that Matthew Quatnetz, a professor of real estate economics at New York University, says that usually ground lease disputes get worked out with a compromise or a settlement in arbitration. Quote, the reason someone does a ground lease is because they don't want to run the building, unquote, he says, and that is especially true at a time like this when the real estate market is difficult. But there is always the risk that the ground owner will try to use the rent reset as a lever to evict the leaseholder. Quote, what's their incentive, unquote, said the investment sales broker. They get the building back. They get a much cheap, much more valuable asset, unquote. After evicting, the landowner can resell the property or hold onto it in the hope that the market rebounds. Earlier this year, the ground lease on a 920,000-square-foot building near Times Square, which sold for $332 million in 2006, was purchased by a Texas family for just $8.5 million in an online auction. If $9 a foot is the going rate for a ground lease, if $9 a foot is the going rate for a ground lease, then the comparably sized 40 Wall Street would not be worth much on the open market. That explains why many real estate investors say Trump would be wise to simply give 40 Wall to the bank when his mortgage comes due, rather than paying back the balance of more than $100 million. Commercial real estate loans are generally, quote, non-recourse, unquote, meaning the owner is not personally responsible for repaying in the event of a default. Although it is theoretically possible that the lender could go after Trump personally for the balance, invoking what is known as a, quote, bad boy clause, unquote, he was found to have committed fraud in misrepresenting his net worth. Such litigation would be costly and far from certain to succeed. Most likely, Trump would walk away free. He would take a tax hit and an ego hit, but 40 Wall would become someone else's problem. It is not in Trump's nature, though, to ever concede defeat. For all his spectacular ups and downs in the real estate business, in his entire career he has transferred only 3 properties back to his lenders, all during his crash in the early 1990s. The only large foreclosure was at the Plaza Hotel. And it is easy to imagine how Trump might see a strategy for saving his personal investment in 40 Wall. It happens to be the same route he is taking to solve all his problems. He just has to win the election. Parenthetically, this was on October 31st of 2024. Obviously, he did. Continuing. If that happens, Trump can sweep away his federal prosecutions and put off any sentence for his New York State conviction indefinitely. The legal pressure on his finances will ease, and he will have new delay options and new immunity arguments to take to the Supreme Court as he attempts to avoid paying the ruinous judgments in his civil cases. Besides the civil fraud case, Trump owes $88 million in damages to E. Jean Carroll for her sexual assault and defamation lawsuits. He will likely be able to string out the legal collection process for years, presuming the judgments stand up. At a New York State Appeals Court hearing held in September, a panel of judges sounded skeptical of Engeron's civil fraud decision, and the size of Trump's penalty could be adjusted downward. As a victorious president-elect, Trump will also be free to liquidate his stock in Truth Social at its peak market. Over the past week, the value of Trump's stake has risen from roughly $4 billion to $6 billion on market optimism about his chances. He would have more than enough financial room to pay off the mortgage on 40 Wall. But why would he bother? Quote, who's going to foreclose on the President of the United States, unquote, says a real estate investor who is familiar with 40 Wall. Quote, nobody, unquote. People will surely be lining up outside the Oval Office to extend Trump credit. The last time he was president, Trump elevated some of his former lenders, Wilbur Ross and Tom Barrack, to positions of influence. When he struggled to find a financial institution to issue him a $175 million bond so he could appeal the civil fraud judgment, a sympathetic billionaire who had made his money in subprime car loans stepped in to help. Quote, he has a lot of friends with a lot of money, unquote, Quatmet says. There will be someone who will back him for financial reasons or political reasons. Trump's first election brought about unprecedented controversy surrounding his business relationships, conflicts of interest, foreign influence, and the Constitutional Emoluments Clause. Those issues have now been mostly resolved in Trump's favor. He turned his hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue into a resort for presidential favor seekers, then flipped it for a $100 million profit. You can imagine how the restored President Trump could do something similar with his 40 Wall Street office building, marketing it to lobbyists, defense contractors, and other people who crave a relationship with the president. Quatnet says the building is a great office location, quote, for people that want to flip the bird to the New York City establishment, unquote. Or for that matter, for foreign interests. Trump paused his overseas business dealings for the duration of his first term, but he and his children revved them back up as soon as he left office, and they are making no promises about self-imposed limits the second time around. Quote, frankly, he got crushed anyway, unquote, Eric Trump recently told the New York Times. There would be little to stop a re-elected President Trump from, say, taking a friendly investment or a loan from a Saudi sovereign wealth fund. With the building recapitalized, Trump would be able to renegotiate with the Germans from a position of strength. In his 2004 book, Trump, How to Get Rich, he described a warm, ongoing relationship with the Hindenburgs, calling them, quote, among the finest people with whom I've ever done business, unquote. But the current state of relations between the parties is unknown, quote, I have been sworn to silence at the moment, unquote, said Percy Pyne, P-Y-M-E, a Florida shipping executive who has represented the family's business interests at 40 Wall in the past. Typically, in ground lease disputes, quote, who winds up winning is a question of who can wheel and deal the best, unquote, Quatnet says. Again, quoting, I'm not a fan, but I am not personally putting money against Trump at that game, unquote. Trump could rework the lease again, or he, or someone interested in backing him, could buy the Germans out. Americans might not even learn if there was a change of ownership. The ground is technically held by a pair of LLCs, and those entities could change hands without public disclosure. And again, secrecy is one of the elements of the Borman Group. And note that Golden Lily, which we will talk about in a minute, later on in the broadcast, time permitting, was merged with Rupert Nopsigold to form the Black Equal Trust. We've been reading from the blog Curb, C-U-R-B-E-B, an article by Andrew Rice from October 31st of 2024, The Weird Worth of 40 Wall Street. And recapping an excerpt, no Trump property, however, has ever experienced a fall like 40 Wall, which was once considered to be the single most valuable property in his portfolio. Quote, what an effing mess that building is, unquote, says one real estate professional who is familiar with its state. Quote, you could charge a nickel a foot and no one wants to pay the Trump Organization rent, unquote. Of the 75 tenants listed on 40 Wall's rental rolls in 2015, the last time it refinanced its mortgage, more than 40 have left. That's 40 out of 75. Around 2 dozen others have long-term leases that appear to be set to expire in the next 2 years. Although the Trump Organization claims 40 Wall is still 75% leased, a few floors are entirely vacant and sitting on the sublet market. Its ground-level retail space is almost totally empty. In today's world, the 1930s vintage skyscraper is likely best suited for conversion to residential use to survive as an office building. It needs expensive upgrades. Either way, it will require a landlord and lenders willing to invest hundreds of millions in capital, a potentially tall order for a convicted felon whose largest source of personal wealth is his founder's stake in the profitless company that owns True Social, a meme stock that fluctuates with his poll numbers. And that's before you even get to the deal breaker, the fact that Trump doesn't own the land beneath his own building and must pay rent to a secretive group of foreign investors who have a contractual option to jack it up in a few years. And Parafractor goes on to comment, "For you all isn't just another building in Donald Trump's real estate portfolio. It was his crown jewel, the kind of crown jewel that Trump routinely overvalued to defraud banks, according to a New York State civil lawsuit. A lawsuit Trump lost in 2024, resulting in the kind of potential penalties that could have wiped out Trump's cash reserves. And that's with a $114 million mortgage payment on the property coming due in 2025. But even at the height of its value, the building was an investment oddity. Trump didn't actually own the ground beneath it. Instead, a secretive group of foreign investors owns that ground, and thanks to this bizarre ownership structure and the fact that the commercial real estate market has been hammered so significantly in recent years, this secretive group of investors were potentially in a position of enormous leverage over Donald Trump. The kind of leverage that could have potentially allowed them to take control of the entire building. At least, they would have had that leverage had Trump lost the election. It's a different ballgame now." And another excerpt from the article. "In April of last year, during his season of indictments, Donald Trump sat for a deposition and defended his worth. The session was held at the New York State Attorney General's office in Lower Manhattan, with a large conference room with a southern exposure that looked out on 40 Wall Street. Trump's nearby, copper-crowned Art Deco office tower. The building also happened to be at the center of that day's litigation, a civil lawsuit accusing Trump of defrauding banks by overstating the value of his properties. Trump grimaced as Attorney General Tish James opened the deposition with a promise of a, quote, fair and impartial, unquote, process. Over 7 contentious hours, he brushed aside her team's questions about valuation. With Trump, it has always seemed the strength of his assets proves the quality of the man. In reality, the building behind the curtain is once again worth next to nothing." This is again as of October 31st, 2024. "Like many Manhattan skyscrapers, 40 Wall has been devastated by the post-pandemic office market crash. Its current operating income, as reflected in disclosures to its mortgage service, appears not to even cover its loan payments, and the building's market value today is almost certainly less than the $114 million balance Trump will owe when the mortgage comes due next year. One real estate investor said Trump's most rational move would be to, quote, throw in the keys to the lender, unquote. Like other New York office landlords who have seen their trophies turn into emblems of disaster. Trump has built his identity around punching back and winning whatever the odds, but while that approach has brought him a stunning comeback in politics, putting him on the cusp of a second term as president, his original business, New York Real Estate, is on the ropes. Earlier this year, James won her fraud lawsuit, and the penalties the judge assessed, $489 million and counting with interest, could be more than enough to wipe out Trump's cash reserves if they stand up on appeal. His family company, the Trump Organization, has been hollowed out by criminal prosecutions and is now operating under the supervision of a court-appointed mentor. The company has been busy overseas, cutting deals to license Trump's personal brand to developments in places like Oman and Dubai, and hosting tournaments affiliated with the Saudi government-backed LIV golf tour. But at home in New York, Trump's name has become a repellent. Condo boards have voted to rip it off their buildings. The city of New York was glad to see him finally out of the deal to operate a public golf course in the Bronx so that it could remove the Trump links, unquote, signage that was so conspicuous from the Whitestone Bridge. Gucci, the anchor tenant in the aging mall at Trump Tower, managed to get Trump to slash its rent in 2020, but the retailer is once again rumored to be plotting a move since its parent company recently spent nearly $1 billion to purchase another building across the street. Trump's most lucrative real estate investments, his passive stakes in a pair of New York and San Francisco office buildings run by Vornado Realty Trust are also worth less than they were before the pandemic. Between 2019 and last year, 40 Wall's annual net operating income, the figure the real estate industry uses to determine a building's market value, fell by about a third to $12 million. One more time. Between 2019 and last year, 40 Wall's annual net operating income, the figure the real estate industry uses to determine a building's market value, fell by about a third to $12 million, according to disclosures made to bondholders. Through the first 6 months of 2024, the building was on pace to generate less than $8 million in net income this year, not enough to even pay all the $9.8 million Trump owes in debt service. Like many office landlords who borrowed before the pandemic, Trump now has a building that is worth less than its mortgage balance on paper. 40 Wall is not alone, says Kent Swig, a real estate executive who has redeveloped many buildings in Lower Manhattan. Two-thirds of the $2 trillion in debt that is coming due over the next 2 years is underwater. Currently, Trump pays the ground owners just $2.5 million a year, but 40 Wall's lease contains a clause that says the rent will periodically reset to reflect the land's fair market value as defined by a formula that is very favorable to the ground owners, given the extraordinary increase in Manhattan land prices over the next few decades. The first reset was supposed to happen years ago, but during the 2008 financial crisis, Trump was able to push off the day of reckoning. And skipping down, the land might be even more valuable today. Woody Heller, a real estate executive who handled a previous sale of 40 Wall back in the 1990s, said that in some circumstances, a rent reset can, quote, destroy the economics, unquote, of a building, and for that reason, a leasehold with a fair market value reset is very hard to refinance, unquote. And as the article notes, the ownership structure of the tower and the ground beneath it is so opaque that it's possible, this is Terrafractal's comment, by the way. And as the article notes, the ownership structure of the tower and the ground beneath it is so opaque that it's possible for the ownership of LLCs that technically own the land to change hands without a public disclosure. So while we know this group of secretive, wealthy German investors definitely owned the land when Trump first bought the tower back in the 90s, we don't actually know who exactly owns those LLCs today. This limited liability corporation, by the way. Continuing. So LLC means, typically in ground lease disputes, quote, who ends up winning is a question of who can wheel and deal the best, Quatnet says. I'm not a fan, but I'm not personally putting money against Trump at that game. And again, Americans might not, from the article, Americans might not even learn if there was a change of ownership. The ground is technically held by a pair of LLCs, and those entities could change hands without public disclosure. And Terrafractal then goes on to comment. And as we can see in the following Real Deal article from January 6th of 2017, while we may not know exactly who owns these LLCs that own the land beneath the tower, it's pretty clear that the owners are very pro-Trump. The Hindenburg brothers even appear to have a history of MAGA-adjacent, quote, anti-elite, unquote, political organizing. Again, that's a bad term because they are the elite. Continuing. But we also learned a very interesting fun fact about that history of the shady ownership of this building. Ferdinand Marcos acquired the lease to the tower just 3 weeks after the German investors took ownership of the land in 1982. Which raises the fascinating question as to whether or not the leasing of the tower to Marcos was the intended plan all along. Because if that's the case, there could be a whole Golden Lily laundering angle to this story that has yet to be revealed. And the next is the Real Deal blog article from January 6th of 2017 by Conrad, K-O-N-R-A-D, Putzier, P-U-T-Z-I-E-R. Meet the obscure German magnates who actually own Trump's most valuable building. Subheaded, President-elect pays Deutschland-based aristocrats. One more thing. President-elect pays Deutschland-based aristocrats and titans of industry $1.6 million a year in rent for 40 Wall Street. The skyscraper at 40 Wall Street occupies a special place in Donald Trump's tale of business success. It is in all likelihood the most valuable single real estate asset he controls, worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And he never gets tired of saying if he bought it for a mere $1 million in 1995. Quote, "On occasion, I am asked what my favorite Beatles have been," unquote, he wrote in his book. "Never give up," unquote. "I'll have a lot to choose from, but there is something about the acquisition of 40 Wall that always stands apart," unquote. What is often read unsaid is that Trump does not actually own the building. He merely leased it for a term of up to 200 years. The building's actual owners are a group of obscure, wealthy Germans. That suddenly matters a great deal. Again, this is on January 6th of 2017, before Trump was inaugurated for his first term. That suddenly matters a great deal. Trump will be sworn in as President of the U.S. on January 20th. The Commander-in-Chief, owing regular lease payments to a bunch of foreign businessmen, might not be concerning if it weren't for the fact that no one seems to know exactly who they are. The next section, the ownership web of 40 Wall. On December 7th, 1982, five Germans bought the land under the power from its long-term owner, the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. The buyers, Stephanie von Bismarck, Joachim Ferdinand von Grumme Douglas, and siblings Amida, Christian, and Walter Hindenburg. More on these people below. Amida and Walter Hindenburg, again, H-I-M-M-E-B-E-R-G, each owned 25% of the property, and Christian Hindenburg owned 30%. Bismarck and Grumme Douglas each owned 10%. In 1992, the three Hindenburg siblings transferred their combined 80% interest to an entity called 40 Wall Limited Partnership. In December 2014, that entity in turn transferred its interest in the property to another entity, 40 Wall Street Holding Corporation. The beneficial owners of that latest entity aren't public, but Christian Hindenburg signed a deal as the buyer on behalf of the 40 Wall Street Holdings Corporation. Meanwhile, in 1992, von Bismarck and von Grumme Douglas transferred their combined 20% interest to an entity called Scandic, capital S-C-A-N-D-I-C, Wall Limited Partnership. In 2004, that entity in turn transferred it to another entity called New Scandic Wall Limited Partnership, which still owns a 20% stake in the building. The beneficial owners of that entity aren't public, but the 2004 deed document lists Joachim Ferdinand von Grumme Douglas as its president. Reached by phone, Stephanie von Bismarck confirmed that she invested in the property, but declined to say whether she still holds a stake. Von Grumme Douglas could not be reached. To sum up, the Hindenburgs still appear to control the entity that owns 80% of 40 Wall Street. Joachim von Grumme Douglas is the president of the entity that owns the remaining 20%, and Stephanie von Bismarck may or may not still be a part of it. I love this next segment. Here's where it gets complicated. For a layperson like me, it got complicated a long time ago. But here's where it gets complicated. While the Germans technically bought the property in 1982, they did not have full control. Since 1966, the building had been leased to investors George Comfort, C-O-N-F-O-R-P, Henry Loeb, L-O-E-B, and Clifford Michel, M-I-C-H-E-L. While the land stayed under German ownership the following decades, the leasehold changed hands several times. 3 weeks after the property sold to the Germans, Comfort and his partners transferred the leasehold to an entity that was later found to hide the wealth of Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos. Following Marcos's exile in 1986, the tower became embroiled in several lawsuits. One more time. 3 weeks after the property sold to the Germans, Comfort and his partners transferred the leasehold to an entity that was later found to hide the wealth of Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos. Following Marcos's exile in 1986, the tower became embroiled in several lawsuits. In 1989, New York-based Resnick family took over, but amid a market downturn, they couldn't make the building lucrative. In 1993, Hong Kong-based Kinson KINSON Properties took control of the leasehold in a foreclosure sale, but it too struggled to make the building a cash cow. In 1995, Trump took over the leasehold and restructured it. Under the new terms, The lease runs through April 30th of 2059, with two tenants options to exceed it by 67.5 years each. One more time. Under the new terms, the lease runs through April 30th of 2059, with two tenants options to extend it by 67.5 years each. Bloomberg valued the leasehold at about $550 million in 2015, though it's unclear how much the Trump Organization receives in annual rent. Donald Trump Jr. last year said the building was 97% leased. With an estimated average of $36 per square foot, Trump could receive more than $30 million a year from tenants at 40 Wall. But this is in 2017. Trump, who took out a $160 million loan against his leasehold in 2015 from Maverick Capital, pays the owners $1.6 million a year under the terms of the ground lease, according to SEC documents cited by the New York Times. Skipping down the next section to Himmelberg's. Himmelberg's, by the way, is the spelling. Elections for that Hamburg Chamber of Commerce plenum don't typically make headlines, but this year marks the exception. A group called We Are the Chamber, unquote, is running on a platform to shake up what they describe as a crusty elite, get rid of mandatory dues, and increase transparency. Sound familiar? It seems that the global anti-establishment movement that swept Trump into the Oval Office and put the United Kingdom on the path to leave the EU has made it into the hallowed halls of one of the merchant city's most prestigious institutions. But that's not the only connection between the so-called chamber rebels and Trump. One of its leaders is Walter Himmelberg Jr. Quote, how Donald Trump's friend is shaking up Hamburg, unquote, read a German language headline in the local German Hamburger Abendblatt on November 11th. Twin brothers Christian and Walter Jr. Himmelberg, 64 years old, are among the wealthiest and best-connected shipbrokers in the world. They run their business named Walter J. Himmelberg GmbH after the late father from a small office in Hamburg's Ballenbaum Street. B-A-N-D-A-M Street. Like Trump, the Himmelbergs inherited a substantial business from their father and made it bigger. But in another sense, they are the exact opposite of Trump. They are reserved, shy away from media coverage, and live a relatively modest lifestyle considering their wealth, one family told PRB. Their motto is, quote, discretion is our business, unquote, the friend said. While many shipbrokers feel flashy corporate offices, the Himmelbergs run their business from a couple of conservatively decorated rooms with a staff of less than a dozen. One shipping industry source who personally knows the Himmelbergs, said. The source said that the brothers likely had some sort of involvement with the majority of container ships that roam the oceans and have particularly strong relationships with Korean shipyards. One more time. The source suggested that the brothers likely had some sort of involvement with the majority of container ships that roam the oceans and have particularly strong relationships with Korean shipyards. In a rare interview, Christian told the maritime news company Lloyd's List in 2004 that with his father's traumatic experience of losing his savings during World War II in mind, the family eschewed stocks or currency investments in favor of property. Something solid, he said. The Himmelbergs appear to have a good relationship with their ground tenant at 40 Wall. In a recent chat with the Hamburger Abendblatt, Walter Jr. described Trump as, quote, a friendly and not at all arrogant person, unquote. Trump, in turn, has heaped praise on the family. I got along very well with the Himmelbergs, and they realized that after a string of losers who had owned the building, I had the integrity of their spectacular property first and foremost in my mind, unquote, he wrote in Never Give Up. They are a truly great family, and they knew I loved the building and that I would be doing everything possible to restore it to its inherent grandeur, unquote. The friendship between the developer and the shipbrokers appears to have lasted. Two sources close to the family told PRB that Himmelbergs spent the holidays with Trump at his Florida estate, Mar-a-Lago, this year. And on January 4th, Walter Himmelberg had a 25-minute meeting with Trump at Trump Tower. According to news reports, he also had lunch with Trump's son, Eric. And the next question is, Joachim von Gruma Douglas and Stephanie von Bismarck. Stephanie Andrea Vivica Martipa von Bismarck, née Silbermeier, married into the aristocratic dynasty most famous for producing Germany's first chancellor, Otto von Bismarck. Her husband, Gottfried von Bismarck, holds a master's degree in electrical engineering from MIT and spent some time working in the U.S. According to his LinkedIn page, he now works as an independent business consultant. He is not to be confused with another Gottfried von Bismarck, famous for hosting drug-fueled orgies in London, who died of a cocaine overdose in 2007. The couple, both in their 70s, lives in Hamburg. Little is known about Joachim Ferdinand von Grumme Douglas other than that he was born in 1933 and lived or still lives in Brussels. According to an online genealogy tracker of the sprawling Douglas family, he is a descendant of Scottish and German aristocrats and the grandson of an admiral in the Imperial German Navy. Joachim von Grumme Douglas and Stephanie von Bismarck appear to be closely related. When Grumme Douglas's mother, Annabel Silbermeier, née von Arnim, A-R-N-I-N, widowed von Grumme Douglas, died in 2001, the death announcement listed Stephanie von Bismarck, née Silbermeier, at a spot typically reserved for immediate relatives of the deceased. As the son of a born von Arnim, Grumme Douglas is the scion of one of Germany's more famous aristocratic dynasties. Arguably, the best-known von Arnim was Hans-Jürgen von Arnim, a World War II general who led Nazi Germany's army in North Africa from 1942 until its capitulation in 1943. And Perry goes on to comment, as we can see, the ownership structure of the land beneath the tower isn't just a mystery at the start of Trump's second term. It was a mystery 8 years ago during his first term. For all the public attention directed at Trump and his many blatant conflicts of interest, we still never really learned who ultimately owned the property, who owned the land beneath Trump's crown jewel. But we do at least have an idea of some of the initial people behind the investment: Stephanie von Bismarck, Joachim Ferdinand von Grumme Douglas, and the siblings Anita Christian and Walter Hindenburg. With Christian Hindenburg signing the deed as the buyer on behalf of 40 Wall Street Holdings Corporation, and overall, it looks like the Hindenburgs control the holding company today, while Stephanie von Bismarck may or may not have divested. And again, note the following. While the land stayed under German ownership the following decades, the leasehold changed hands several times. 3 weeks after the property sold to the Germans, Comfort and his partners transferred the leasehold to an entity that was later found to hide the wealth of Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos. Following Marcos's exile in 1986, the tower became embroiled in several lawsuits. Perifacto goes on to comment, so what's Trump's relationship with this mysterious investment group? Well, as we can see, the Hindenburgs, two of the biggest shipbrokers in the world, are not only quite chummy with Trump, but also appear to be ideologically aligned with the MAGA anti-elite, unquote, agenda. And do note that. And that's basically who owns Donald Trump. And again, very, very interesting indeed. Now, with regard to Ferdinand Marcos, his wealth came, as we've talked about, many times from one of the most important books ever written, Gold Warriors, by Sterling and Peggy Seagrave, subtitled America's Secret Recovery of Yamashita's Gold, with a cover endorsement, by the way, by the late Iris Chang, the author of The Rape of Nanking. The Seagraves have uncovered one of the biggest secrets of the 20th century, and her, quote, suicide, unquote, doesn't appear to have been a suicide at all. Now, about Ferdinand Marcos and his wealth. Again, it was recovered Japanese war loot, as we have spoken about many times. Reading from Gold Warriors, while the agency, meaning the CIA, was physically moving Marcos bullion, it actively encouraged the Marcoses to salt their profits in America. This became clear during the Honolulu fraud trial of Rommel Wiewold in 1983 to 1985, which revealed that his investment firm, Bishop, Baldwin, Wiewold, Billingham, and Wong, was a conduit for CIA funds in general. The firm helped Marcos and other wealthy Filipinos invest illicit funds in America. When Imelda later was tried in New York on charges of racketeering, her defense attorneys told us that she and her husband had been encouraged to do so, quote, by their friends in the White House, unquote. And by the way, who is currently president of the Philippines? Well, it's Ferdinand Marcos Jr., a.k.a. Bongbong. Once again, from Gold Warriors. I spoke about this, by the way, in For the Record 1261. As evidence that Marcos was in possession of enormous quantities of gold bullion far in excess of known Philippine reserves, private investigator Arlene Friedman tracked down two Australian brokers who in the early 1980s had negotiated nine contracts with Marcos to sell a total of $1.63 trillion in gold. They established for the cohort record and to the, they established for the court record and to the satisfaction of the jury that the deals were made and were not a fiction. The documentation they provided established beyond any doubt that Marcos did have in his possession and did sell $1.63 trillion worth of gold bullion. The Australians would also testify that while visiting Marcos, they were blindfolded and taken to a warehouse where the blindfolds were removed, and they saw that the warehouse was full of gold bars. Norman Tony Bacus, a Las Vegas investor, told Friedman that on a visit to the Philippines, he was taken to Mount Apo, APO, where Marcos was building a Mount Rushmore-style memorial to himself. Bacus said the president's son, Bongbong, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., took him into secret tunnels in Mount Apo, where he was shown boxes of gold bars and other treasure. Bacos said Bongbong told him this gold was waiting to be flown out of the country by the U.S. military at the behest of the CIA. Bacos was an expert source because he was linked by marriage to one of the senior Marcos intelligence officers, Colonel Pimentel, who arranged a number of these gold deals and personally escorted the gold to its destination as a senior member of the Abella. That's the group that ran this gold. And again, Ferdinand Jr. is now president of the Philippines. I think one of the driving engines of many things, including the pivot to Asia, unquote, and the continuity in policy, and two people who superficially perhaps appear to be opposites, but actually, if you look at what they're doing, it's a continuity, and that is actually three. Barack Obama to Donald Trump 1, to Joe Biden to Donald Trump 2, same deal. Now, what is going on today, and what the hell does any of this matter? In my opinion, take a good look, by the way, at Kash Patel, who is poised to become director of the FBI. Perhaps he's already been confirmed. What is taking place today is this. Now, the Enterprise is the group of former national security operatives who basically retained their national security connections but began operating in the private sector or free from public scrutiny. This was at the epicenter of the Iran-Contra affair. And they made liberal access of the Golden Lily loot. Reading now from Gold Warriors. Some of their motives are of questionable constitutionality. Can't see any of that going on today, can we? Today. Some of their motives are of questionable, one more time. Some of their motives are of questionable constitutionality. We reproduce letters from members of the Enterprise Network describing how they intend to use recovered Japanese war loot to set up a private FBI-style security force to police the American public and a separate military-industrial complex, quote, controlled by us, unquote. This costs money. Groups like the Moonies and the Birchers and wealthy individuals put up only a portion of what is needed. One obvious solution was to divert Black Eagle funds, such as the dormant accounts controlled by Santa Romana, or the things skipping down. When Marcos was making his second-generation recoveries in the 1970s and needed help getting the black gold to market, he and the Enterprise made common cause. Because members of the Enterprise had access to CIA aircraft, U.S. Air Force planes, and U.S. Navy ships, when Marcos Gold left Subic or Clark Subic Naval Base or Clark Air Force Base, it was impossible to tell whether this was done officially by the White House or privately by the Enterprise. in chapter 14, we will see episode after episode where this overlap is demonstrated. Again, what's going on today? What are we seeing in front of our eyes? We'll talk next week about the coup that is going on, not the first by any means in this country, speaking of the, quote, enterprise, unquote. Some of their motives are of questionable constitutionality. Now, I don't see that going on. We reproduce letters from members of the Enterprise Network describing how they intend to use recovered Japanese war loot to set up a private FBI-style security force to police the American public and a separate military-industrial complex controlled by us. One more time. And by the way, this is on the CDs that were, information CDs that were available with the book Gold Warriors. I don't think they're available any longer. We reproduce letters from members of the Enterprise Network describing how they intend to use recovered Japanese war loot to set up a private FBI-style security force to police the American public and a separate military-industrial complex, quote, controlled by us, unquote. And that, in my considered opinion, is exactly what is going on today. And I think the real story of 40 Wall Street is as its vehicle for such financial maneuvering. And it's very, very interesting that Ferdinand Marcos wound up getting a hold of one of those myriad fronts 3 weeks after the Germans bought the land under Trump's crown jewel of his commercial real estate portfolio. And again, do not overlook for the record 1109 about Donald Trump and the Deutsche Bank, a principal financial institution of the Third Reich and one of the bulwarks of the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization, deeply involved, by the way, with the Black Eagle Trust merging Japanese Golden Lily with looted German gold into a combined entity called, again, the Black Eagle Trust. That was discussed at length in the book Gold Warriors. And, again, it could not be, the importance of that book could not be exaggerated. And indeed, I think the importance of the secretive owners of the land underneath 40 Wall Street, including the Enderby use as a Marcos money laundering entity, that could not be exaggerated. Please, when it is ready, get the 64-gigabyte flash drive. It's not ready yet. It will be all of the information I'm talking about in this program, plus several others, will be on that flash drive. Please get it. It will have my entire life's work printed and recorded. It will have the brilliant comments by Parafractal. It will have a mini library of old anti-fascist books on easy-to-download PDFs. And also, eventually, although maybe it'll be the next 64-gig flash drive, some digitized tapes from the old when For the Record, actually initially Hard Rain and For the Record aired on CalX, the University of California, Berkeley radio station, which it has not done since 2001, basically. In any event, this concludes For the Record program number 1374, 40 Wall Street, Part 2. This is being recorded on February 15th of the year 2025. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.